You're listening to Type Radio. My name is James Bull from Moving Brands. Now we're talking.
This is Type Radio.
Now we are talking.
Type Radio.
Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the European Design Awards in Rotterdam. It's May 29th, 2010, and our guest is James Bull from Moving Brands. Welcome.
Hi.
The first question is there such a thing as European design, you think?
As European design? Well, I think the best way, well, I'd just keep it simple. That just means people that do design in Europe. So I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think there's anything special about it or anything especially positive or negative. I think increasingly things are much more global. But I think as a traditional powerhouse of what great design is, I'd say, yeah, most of it comes from Europe.
And does British design stand apart from European, or do you think it's getting more and more a part of European design?
What you're trying to say is, are you going to go for the euro soon? No, but no. No.
No. I don't know, it's not up to me.
No,
I'm not. I don't know, it's a funny question. I think maybe because you're from the UK, in the same way that everyone gets stereotypes thrown at them, maybe everyone thinks that we're all kind of like, we don't want to be part of this thing called Europe. But it's not really the case. Most people I know don't mind one way or another, whatever kind of makes sense from an economic point of view. But what was your original question?
Well, if British design sort of sees itself apart from European design.
I don't know if it sees itself apart. I think maybe the clients still see it maybe a bit that way. We get told by our clients that they come to London to get what they call the best of design. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I just happen to have been born in a particular place and be a designer. And so being born in the UK, I just kind of ended up in London because that's where the centre of the design community is, I suppose. I think there's a perception with clients that there's a good quality of creative spirit and of output in design in London. I don't know about the difference in the rest of Europe.
Do you think, what do you think is typically British then? What is that?
Typically British, I don't know. Bulldogs and memory bowler hats.
Yeah? Do you have a bulldog?
The beef
No, I don't. Although my surname's Bull, so maybe a bit. I don't know. Ask me again and we'll do a better one. What's okay.
And in your work, is there something you can't, I guess you can't remove yourself from it and then look.
No, you can't remove yourself from the work, but I don't think there's, I mean, most of our work isn't actually with UK-based clients. A high percentage of it, probably about 70%, is with clients that are either from somewhere in Europe or American, and then everything else kind of makes up stuff in the UK studio. So I think what's good about being in London and good about being in the UK is you do get lots of global stuff kind of happening. I think a lot of the bigger companies kind of go there to find something. So it feels less local to me. We don't really have many local clients. I mean, we haven't said that we have a Savile Row Tailors, but on the other hand, we have very large sort of global companies that we work with as well. So there's a bit of that. But you're looking for more of a thing about style. You're trying to find out if there's a style to it.
You know, if there are specifics, like, well, that's actually like a British quality. I don't know if there is, but we were just wondering about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because you try, you know, I try and think about what they are, but then you apply that to French design or Dutch design or German design, and it's all got the same things it's trying to do. It's trying to have a really good creative idea that can run across lots of stuff. And then it's trying to output that in the best possible way. I think maybe British design is a bit more general in the way it thinks about a concept. And at the end of the day, we're not that worried about which font it is. And some of the things that are a little bit more prevalent, I'd say, in some of the design in Europe, where it's much more typographic based or much more kind of systems based. And I think maybe we don't necessarily start there. We kind of, that's the output, but we start somewhere that's more of a generalist free idea, I suppose. But I don't really know. I mean,
let's just stop now.
Do you think there's a difference?
Well, I'm thinking also the tongue-in-cheek humour, which is like so specifically, but why we all watch BBC television, because we We just, it cracks us up. And that's really, like, you don't find this in Germany. Is that also applicable to design in some kind of way?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of design. I mean, there's a lot of design and a lot of fashion and a lot of stuff happening all the time. I wouldn't say across the whole UK. It's easier just to think about it as London. Mm-hmm. But and we don't take it that seriously. But then at moments we take it very seriously. But we're quite happy to let it wash over us a little bit. We realise how transient it is and that things change all the time. And I suppose we kind of like how mixed up our culture is. It's extremely diverse, extremely accepting of lots of different cultures and lots of different ways of doing things. And I think you do get that kind of hot pot, melting pot kind of atmosphere. And that's, if anything, that's what's prevalent in the design, I think. That's why our fashion is always a little bit less structured, a little bit more flamboyant, although I wouldn't really ever use the word flamboyant when talking about something from the
UK. Well, there's a little bit of anarchy.
Irony. Anarchy. I don't know if they're the right words. But yeah, there's definitely a... Humour's not quite the right word. I mean, people use the word Britishness. I don't know a better word for it than that. It's not quite humour. It's not quite irony. It's not quite anarchy, but it's somewhere in all of those. And but if that's different, I don't know. You tell me.
But can we go back and maybe it's good to explain like how the Moving Brands was initiated. How did you begin?
How did you end up being a designer?
No.
Yeah. Well, do you want me to talk about Moving Brands in general? How that sort of started off?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Moving Brands started off at college. So me and another guy, two other guys, Ben Walsenholme and a guy called Joe Sharp, were all studying with each other at Central St Martins. And we got along really well. We saw the world a bit differently. We didn't quite have the same design aesthetics. But when we got together as a group, it was really rich in terms of the way we spouted out ideas and the way we thought about things. And it was a very broad course. So we got taught a little bit of typography, a little bit of animation, a little bit of moving image, a little bit of how to use a computer, a little bit of photography, a little bit of filmmaking, a little bit of editing, you know, all of these things. And I think that is the main thing that kind of then was the seed to the way that we approach what we do at Moving Brands. So we set it straight up out of college. 6 months out of college, we'd set this thing up called Moving Brands, and we just started trying to do it. We were very young, very naive, but very enthusiastic. And that's a pretty good combination of things to have to get something going. We quickly realized we couldn't work everything out ourselves, so we brought in other people. We brought in one of the founders, Ben Walsenholme's brother, and his cousin. His cousin was running hotels and was teaching people how to do karate. His brother was just...
great credentials, by the way.
His brother was really...
he beats up the clients.
His brother... maybe in the early days. But his brother was really a guy called Guy Walsenholme, and he's kind of like the quickest, brightest person I know. Everyone who meets him just like, he can handle that thing. I remember he learned how to do 3D in like 3 days, just because we'd managed to sell ourselves in doing a project, doing some 3D work, and then really we didn't know how to do it. We were quite good at selling what we did. So he became a really like proficient doer of things. And now he's like the best animator I've ever met. But in the early days, he was just really willing to do stuff. And then that was the beginnings of the company. We took out student loans and we had one laptop. We had enough money together to hire a floor of a building, so we did that, but we had no money to pay the month after, and that's how we started. So we knew by Christmas we had to make enough money to pay the next rent, and then that turned into no pay the next rent, and then that turned into right, let's try and get enough money together to do the next 3 months, and we had years of that, you know. So that's how we started. So there's an entrepreneurial spirit to it, but there's a multidisciplinary sort of spirit to it, where we've always had a love of lots of different types of media and lots of different stuff.
And are you more specialised now, or are you still like all over the place in like interdisciplinary
Well, I think we're all over the place, but it's more structured. So the way we think about a branding project or a design project is, I still think, is different to the way a lot of the other agencies think, especially if you think about it in terms of branding. So, you know, we could see that there were a lot of silos in the way that clients and creative people were interfacing with the world. So there's this thing called advertising. There was this other thing called branding. There was another thing called design. 12 years ago, there was this world of digital interactive stuff that people were trying to get to grips with. And then to the side of that was sound design. And then over here were people that made TV and, you know, and it all just seemed crazy to us. And it all kind of, wouldn't it be great if you could have an agency that could do a lot of those all in one house. And wouldn't that mean an amazing thing when you made a mark that it wouldn't necessarily be made by a designer drawing it in Illustrator? It could be made as a 3D mark by an animator and then repurposed for print. And how will sound design affect what a logo should look like? Oh my God, there are these new things called laptops, and they've got pixel based stuff. How does that affect what we do? And you know, it just became this kind of different ethos to the way you create a brand. So when we create a brand now, if the budget's there and if the desire's there from the client, we're making logos that move. And the last thing we're thinking about is how it works on a letterhead, because no one sees a letterhead anyway. No one really gives a damn about business cards. But the public and normal people that aren't designers see TV ads and hear stuff on radio and are interacting with things online. They're the places you need to get right first when you're making a brand. Don't leave it to the advertising agency. They don't know how to run a brand. Don't leave it to a digital agency. They don't know how to design logos, you could argue. Mm-hmm. The branding agency has got to deliver on those things, have a plan for how they're going to roll out, and have a kind of just create more assets at the beginning. Don't leave it to the end.
When you were in art school, do you still have that same ethos, or that was your focus right from the beginning, or is this
no? That ethos is developed, but right at the beginning, it was. We've really quickly got to this idea that if you're going to design a logo, you need to make sure you know how it moves and what it sounds like, because we were kind of in a few areas and we were hearing weird things, like even the big branding agencies that I won't name, but the big stalwart, being around forever branding agencies would spend a year working on a project, deliver it in a massive guidelines that no one really reads, and it would get kind of delivered to the client, and then the client would say, right, now I need to make a TV ad. So they'd brief an ad agency to make a TV ad, which would have nothing to do with the brand. Mm-hmm. And then they'd go into Soho, into a post-production house, and say, right, now make the logo move. And a year later, that's the thing, that's the first thing most people are going to see as a communication from a brand. And it's not been done by the branding agency. It's madness. Absolute madness. And so we just sort of saw all these silos and thought, put it all together. But was it there at the beginning? Really early on, we said, if we're going to design a logo, let's make sure we know how it's going to move and how we make a sound for that. So that's cool. You know, we call them things like mnemonics and sonic mnemonics, and that's the logo. And then we repurpose for print. But it took us years to actually deliver on that, to actually get clients in the right frame mind, to actually get media channels in place where that makes sense to a client. It took ages. The catch-up was, like, astounding. It was, you know, 10 years ago we were talking like that, and it's only been really in the last 5 years that we've been able to deliver on a lot of those things. And even then, sometimes they're siloed up. It's only when you get a really forward-thinking client, like a Swisscom, that they really let you do it. But then in the last 2 years, my God, everyone wants it. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable, especially technology.
And have you profited a lot from being one of the first, like, thinking that way?
I don't even know if we're the first. Just think we just started thinking that way. I think it's, I don't know, are we the first?
Well, early on.
Early adopters on. of a thing. Because I see it as we were early adopters, and maybe we created some of these ways of thinking, I'm not sure. But to us it just seemed obvious, and it seems even more obvious now. But we're starting to get into a different thing now, where it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I sometimes in other presentations things say things like, any brand agency that's not thinking like that isn't doing their job right, and they shouldn't be calling themselves a branding agency. They should be calling themselves an agency that designs logos that won't work for digital stuff, you know? And it just increasingly is not going to make sense to have that approach. But I think there's an advantage to it, but we had to go through a lot of, jump through a lot of hoops to get there. Jump through a hell of a lot of hoops to get there. I mean, we built the business on partnering as well, so we used to partner with all the bigger branding agencies. Mm-hmm. So in the early days when we were professing to this stuff and some of the other agencies looked like they were doing it, it's because they'd hired us to do those elements because they didn't know how to do them. And then I think gradually they've built their own digital teams and they've built their own moving teams, but they don't really believe it still. It's not the way they sell. It's not the way they write their budgets or create their timelines. And therefore, it's always still tagged on the end as a nice to have. Mm-hmm. Whereas we as an agency just believe it's absolutely core. To me, that's the identity. And then everything else comes out of it.
But do you sort of not forecast, but I assume that a lot has to, well, the development with technology. Now you talk moving brands. So obviously those companies 25 years ago, I think they couldn't see that far ahead. I mean, I wonder what happens in the next 10 years, like where are we really going?
We were youthful and intuitive. So I'm not going to pretend that there was a, we didn't research it and kind of knew it intuitively and then kept telling that story as often as possible and sort of stuck to our guns, and now it's come into fruition. But I think once you've done that, it is a little bit easier to see what might be mm-hmm. out there in the future. So we're getting into the realms of, in fact, we've already delivered on identity logos and identity elements that react to different types of input. So instead of the way a logo looks being dependent on the vision of a designer, why don't we take data about that mm-hmm. company and use that data to visualize the company, if you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So with the Swisscom work, we've got that mark. When we made the mark, it was made in 3D and it was made to move and it was made to have a sound. But it was also made to be able to react to those elements as well. So I've got versions that react to sound. If you plug data off of their network, so how many people are using email mm-hmm. stuff, it can react to those sorts of things. So the job of a designer isn't about designing the monolith that will never change. It's about designing the parameters of an object. Mm-hmm. A bit like saying the Earth has gravity of a certain pull and night and day within a certain time frame, and therefore that's the way things are. I think the job of a designer, especially in brand, is going to be to design those parameters and then let things like logo and typeface and colours kind of be dependent on other types of data, like time of day and temperature outside and activity on networks, those sorts of things. That starts to get really interesting because you're not designing that thing that only exists in black and is only that typeface or is only ever that size. It can be more kind of free than that, and it gets quite exciting because you've still got control of it, but it's a realization that in doing that it kind of reacts to things.
Use this concept that you can apply this almost to anything in a way, like for example for fashion or for do you ever consider doing that for another medium?
Well, we've done a few self-initiated projects. I don't know how much about our portfolio you've seen, but a couple of years ago now we did a project called Where, but it's about We Are, so mm-hmm. W-E-A-R-E. And the idea behind that was instead of having a prima donna-esque fashion designer, mm-hmm. why not let a network of individuals, a community of individuals, be additive to a design process? So we created a site which allowed you to draw little icons, and the idea was that once we got a set of icons, say a few thousand, we'll turn that into some sort of fashion product. So the thing that spilled out the other end was a scarf that was made out of all these little icons that people had mm-hmm. sent. And it's a great idea because it was a great thing anyway, just because it felt like a cool way to create something. We could create the parameters by which other people could then create a product. But the other thing is, when you actually got that product, you could look at it and go, oh, look, there's that little, I designed that bit.
Yeah, you feel connected to
So you're actually making non-designers think about how a design happens and how it ends up being on a product. So we call that co-created fashion, which is just a buzzword type thing. But there is a real feeling that they're better ways to get to results. Designers don't know better, I believe. Because kind of hear other people say that, you know, designers need to make the world better and, you know, have a real responsibility to do these things and to communicate well. Well, we do, yeah, but we don't know better than people that don't know anything about design. In some ways, they know better because they react to things that we don't react to because we're caught up in design and mm-hmm. they're just caught up in what makes sense to them and what communicates easily and what makes them want to buy something compared to something else and, you know, much more guttural things. But, is that enough of a riddle for you?
We'll end it with designers don't know better. I think that's pretty good.
Well, I don't think we do.
Yeah, but you don't feel like you can... Yeah, but for example, by setting parameters, you're already saying you do know, but you know, you do. That's not
good.
I mean, You were saying, here is your ingredients, but you know exactly what dose to put in. You're not really giving it up to
the hand. Right. Yeah. However you cut a salad up, if you've got good ingredients, it's going to be good.
Yeah,
but you also, you know, I think it's a little bit misleading to say, it's really in your hands, but it's but you are really in control, right?
Sure, I suppose so. I think I just get excited about what it might mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going, this is going to be the way to do it, and... You know, I don't say print is dead or, you know, any of those kind of things, because there's a place for everything. But I think increasingly with the types of clients we have, I get more and more convinced that as an agency that talks about branding and a system that's going to work across everything for a client, you can't ignore a whole load of media which is currently ignored by branding agencies.
How many people are in your studio?
So we're about 40 people now. So it's taken 12 years to get there. We're about 40. And then we're also in San Francisco, which is about, it's like a handful. It's kind of five people. One of the founders, Ben, has gone over there, you know, to head that up and make that happen. And then in Zurich, it's two, three people. Mm. And same in Tokyo.
Wow.
Two, three people.
Do you feel more, I was wondering if you turned into more of a manager instead of doing the design work?
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah?
Of course.
Yeah. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah. Early on, it's a struggle. Well, not early on, midway through. You know, I think you sometimes talk about it and it's a visual thing, so it might not work for you guys, but I think you start your career as a designer thinking that the mark making is all important. Then you realise that outside of that, it's actually the way you communicate it to the client that's important. Then outside of that, you realize it's the way you budget it and the way that you plan it and the way that you then talk about that to the client, which is all important. Then you realize it's all important about the way you sell your company, not the work at all. Just it's your company and your ethoses and how you do that. And then it's just like this ever increasing increments of stuff. And then at certain points, you kind of get back to the middle and you go, mark making is what it's all about.
Well, so where are you?
Yeah. I've been through that whole thing once, probably twice, and now I'm feeling like I've got the business at a point where the people doing the design, so my creative directors, my design directors, my senior designers, are all way beyond me in terms of design skill, and they're way beyond me in terms of being able to build relationships with clients at a level which is about what those clients really need, if you see what I mean. Whereas I'm a bit more generalist across the whole business and I kind of get more going to events and doing talks and the initial stages with a client, maybe to get things going as a founder in the first meetings and those sorts of things. But my God, the team I've got back in London especially is just way beyond the kind of thing that I can bring to the actual design process.
Do you want to give them a special message?
Well done, guys.
I love you.
I don't love them, they're just good.
Were you affected by the economic recession and the financial recession?
Well, in the past, in the different dips, because we've been around long enough to see a couple of those, well, at least another one of those when the whole digital thing went tits up. But that hit us a year early. And this time, we have managed to get ourselves in a position where we've got quite a few American clients and they seem to be spending their way out of recession, whereas the clients in London and the European clients seem to be a little bit more hesitant about spending money that they might not have. So we probably should have felt it, but we haven't, not this year or last year. Last year was our best year to date. This year just gone. Where are we? 2010. So 2009, another best year. And it looks like 2010 will be another best year in terms of revenue, turnover and profit and loss and all of those things. And weirdly, I think the work's getting better and better and better as well. It doesn't seem to be suffering. The more we get, the more corporate our clients get, in a way, we seem to be making a much bigger effect for them to make them less corporate feeling and kind of resonate better with real people and all that kind of stuff. We somehow seem to have hit something that's working. So it hasn't hit us yet, but hey, it hit us a year early last time. It probably hit us next year or the midway, towards the end of this year.
No, don't say that.
Well, no.
You never know.
You never know.
The one thing I do know about business and design is it's the only sure thing is change. You're always going to have periods of making lots of money and everything's good and you're going to have periods where it's shit. And the main thing is to keep going towards something that you kind of believe, and that's the only way through it, really.
the last one. How important are design awards and competition joining them for the Stu for Moving Brands?
Well, we didn't enter any for first 7 years of our life.
So that will be a no then.
But they, I don't know, it's difficult for us. A lot of our very best work has never been seen by anyone outside of our studio because we can't show it because it's too, we sign agreements with companies where we, you know, we get to do a lot of work, but it means we can't necessarily use it to case study ourselves. That was the case with Nokia, but we're just in the process of saying, well, you know, we have to show this work. So we're just in the process of showing more of that. So we therefore don't enter them into awards either. We were really lucky with Swisscom. That was a big piece of work, but actually it was the first one where it was possible to enter into awards and those kinds of things, which is why we did it. And it's picked a few up. I don't think it won here, actually, but it's been picking up awards. Mostly because of its different approach, and not only has it got a different approach, but it looks really good at the end of the day. It looks like it's, you know, as designed as anything else. But I think they're great for the industry. I don't really ultimately think they mean very much. I've judged a few awards, and it's not a very scientific process, the judging, put it that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. This is Type Radio. Now we are talking to you. This is Type Radio. Now we are talking to you. Type Radio. Now we're talking.